Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. I'm Dave Brown. I'm here with Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town. Al, I think I may have stepped in it a little bit with Al. Earlier today, I had a new phone. I was trying it out. The camera's great, and I was recording. I didn't even realize it, and Al was there, and Al was eating pistachios, okay? And my camera was recording Al. He was throwing the shells everywhere, just a total and complete mess. And he turns around, and he sees that I'm recording. We're standing right there in front of him. I'm recording. Al, total mess with the pistachios, and he looks back at me and says, "Hey, what are you doing? You recording?" And I said, "Listen," he said, "Al, I didn't even know that you were going to be here with pistachios. I'm sorry." I said, "I'll tell you what. I'll just delete this recording, and we can go back on about our lives. I won't tell anybody about the pistachios. Everything's going to be fine." Well, he looks at me, and he goes, "The damage is done, my friend." And the way he said that, I didn't feel like I was his friend anymore. So I admire his professionalism in doing the announce today, but this whole thing with the pistachios, I hope our relationship is still okay. Because when he said, "My friend," didn't feel like a friend. Have you heard anything?
Well, first of all, I wasn't told anything about the filming for Entitled Town 360. And I think this should be reported to the authorities. I think the Bengals are on it.
Well, I hope so, because their security team, there's some crack security aces there in Cincinnati. And it sounds like they got some
bargain basement encyclopedia Browns, knowing how that family runs that team.
Well, I mean, this guy who I don't know what he looks like, but he certainly sounds like some background character on The Sopranos. And
I was thinking more like Affleck in Good Will Hunting. Yes, suspect.
There you go. Right. He's retainer. That's
retainer. But there's nothing more Bengals than that minor league bullshit. There's nothing more Cincinnati Bengals than a ham-handed investigation into what's going on. Look, and I just want to know why the Entitled Town 360 was not authorized by me.
Your Bengals security. Your job is to protect Andy Dalton. Okay? Nobody is looking for Andy Dalton. Nobody wants to mess with him. Nobody has any beef with him whatsoever. No one cares about him. No one cares about your team. Okay? Your job is to, keep the peace of the Cincinnati Bengals. And they have won one game all year. And you've had to beat all of those games. And now, finally, what falls in your lap? Here's a guy who is somehow supposedly affiliated with the New England Patriots, who's got a camera pointed at the sideline. And you're like, we're going to hop. They hopped on their motorcycles, okay? Did a few laps around First Energy Field in Cleveland. I think that's what it's called. Whatever. The football stadium in Cleveland. They did a few laps on their mopeds, their security mopeds.
Okay. And Paul Blart Mall Cop tried to bust the case open.
Yeah, that's what happened. I mean, it's preposterous. I think let's get into one thing that the Bengals could not secure, which was the end zone on Sunday. And then we'll talk some more about this ongoing, never-ending supposed scandal and supposed cheating and alleged everything.
Well, I have some questions about what's going on in Baltimore, because the Bengals are in the AFC North.
Yeah. I think we should talk about that.
They play in the same division as the Ravens, so we need to delve into that one.
Where was Bengals security when it came to Ravens 360? That's what we all want to know. But let's.
There was a crisis at Orange Julius. That's where they were.
Before we tell the people what they want to know, let's tell the people what they have to know, which is that the Patriots won a game on Sunday. They won it pretty convincingly. And I think everyone in the local media immediately jumped back into, like, the game was so, the Patriots had a strong effort, strong to the point where no one wants to talk about it. Let's just focus on the controversy. So why don't we talk about it a little bit? Do you feel better than you did a week ago?
Maybe.
I will tell you
that that angry. Game was a angry is my angry. Default setting, Brown. Let's go.
You were but angry.
Here, that entire game was perfectly encapsulates the Patriots' social media existence. They got up. They scored. They scored in their first drive. They gave up a touchdown. They fell behind 10-7, and the goddamn world was imploding. If you go back between 1:45 Eastern and 2:45 Eastern on Sunday during that game, it is, you want to talk about a shit show. I mean, people pissing their pants everywhere. I did not look at the usual suspects, but the Patriots are a good team. People are still, they're still pissing their pants over stuff. I will say, let's focus that nobody else in the Boston media is doing. Let's focus on what went right. 5 turnovers.
Yeah, geez.
They ran the ball well. They had 175 yards on the ground. Burkhead coming in like he did last year as the finisher, as he did in the AFC title game against the Chiefs and again in the Super Bowl against the Rams. He came in playing running back version of Mariano Rivera. They did not turn the ball over. And if that's what they are, they're really good on special teams.
And great.
They're really good on defense, and they do not make mistakes on offense. And we always do this bingo. We always, you know, rely on you as a Giants fan. This is basically the 1990 Giants recipe with Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback in the history of the league, playing the role of Jeff Hostetler. Let me try that again. Well, Jeff Hostetler.
Well, I might take a few. I might quibble with some of that a little bit, but you know, as far as the comparison to the Giants go, the Giants offense was better than this.
Hostetler?
Yeah. Yeah, because
they kicked 5 field goals in the NFC title game that year.
That's true. Maybe I'm out of my skis over that one, but they did struggle really hard to score. It's true. Yeah. You know,
hot takes in that NFC title game, and I can't believe we're gonna recap a game that happened in January of 1991,
this game,
which is one of the great games of all time.
Pause here.
The Giants, if they didn't force a fumble on Roger Craig, that game's over.
This game should be the 1990 Giants should be a square on Entitled Town Bingo.
I think they are. If they're not, they will be.
Yeah, which is a thing that our good friend Patrick Scartelli put together for us. And
good friend Scartelli.
I'm sure we've already. Probably had like 6 bingos in the short time we've been talking here, but
there's 17 bingo cards that are full.
But that team, okay, so yeah, they did, but you know what they had going for them was continuity, where the receivers and the running back and the offensive line was great and it was healthy, and so as much as you almost have the inverse here, where you have that team had all the pieces around Hostetler, the infrastructure was there to keep playing great, and it took them time. They were terrible in December, but they put it together, and that's what this team needs to do. They have the quarterback. What they need is for the line and for the receivers to for those two respective groups to play cohesively and get on the same page with where the offense needs to be. There were some big steps in that direction on Sunday. Once again, after halftime, they played better. They made some good adjustments, both offensively and defensively. And I think that, you know, last week we talked about N'Keal Harry, and I compared him to sort of a Saturday Night Live actor who comes on and everybody hates him because they don't know what he's good for. And then all of a sudden, he gets one laugh out of you, and then it starts building. Well, this week, again, this was like another appearance on the show for N'Keal Harry. And,
Should have 3 touchdowns in 3 games.
Right. He had one again on Sunday, and I made a really nice play. Belichick, in his conference call this morning, had a really good answer about why Harry was able to get open, like how he was able to get open. And he talked about how one of the things for younger players is to not get taken out of that play by being driven out of bounds, when he runs his route, cuts, heads toward the sideline, he was covered, and that's where the defensive back wants to take you out of bounds. Harry was able to avoid that and come back and cut in. Meanwhile, all the other receivers, as the play had broken down, the other receivers, and this is a situation where you see what happens when people on this are on the same page. What the rest of the players did was they cleared out. They didn't eat up that space and draw defenders in. They gave Harry a place to go, and that's why Tom was able to find him. So it was two things you look at there. One, the rookie making the right play, not getting taken out, and two, the other receivers doing what they had to do to help one of their teammates get open.
Matt Chatham made that point today on his podcast, The Razor Show, friend of entitled.
So I'm just, Chatham. So I'm, I need to listen to that podcast. So I just don't just repeat Matt Chatham.
No, you got, you made your point. It, you know,
I made Matt Chatham's point unwittingly.
It's a salient point, Dave.
There are worse people. There are worse people to be repeating. So
allegedly,
yes.
That podcast is actually really good. The thing that sticks out to me in the three games that Harry has played is that he is a freak of nature in terms of his strength, his athletic ability. The ball he caught, it was called back by a penalty. He caught a ball down on the right sideline where he elevated over defensive back, pulled it in, and basically physically dominated the left cornerback of the Bengals when he was playing wide receiver on the right. And I think that's the kind of thing. If you think back to the touchdown he scored on the left side against Dallas, he can catch with his hands. He's physical. And that's the kind of guy. It's like they didn't overdraft the tight end to replace Gronkowski. They didn't get desperate to sign somebody in free agency. They got a physical player on the outside. And that's, again, they're exploiting market inefficiencies they did last year with Michelle, like they did this year with Harry.
He hasn't had a lot of snaps. And you look at it and you go, oh, well, here's a guy who's had three touchdowns in the red zone. What's he played, four games?
Right, and I'll tell you, because he hasn't played a lot of games, he is, you know, we get a lot of shit in Boston media about, oh, Team X is going to beat the Patriots. Maybe he's Player X, where the opponents have no idea what he's capable of, and maybe he flashes, maybe he doesn't. Sanu's ankles, maybe it gets better. You know, Edelman, God bless Edelman. He is a one tough SOB. They beat Buffalo Sunday. Maybe he sits. I hate saying that because there's nothing that irks me more than media not wanting football players to play football. But there is a roadmap for the Patriots to go into Baltimore and be on even ground with them.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a ways off. I think, you know, another point that Chatham made was that this team, you know, that it has the elements to put together a top-notch offense, and, you know, they've got a month to do it. And his theory is that in a month they can do it. And my theory is, well, we'll find out. You know, that's the objective for them, can they put these pieces together by January? And if they do that, they're going to be very successful. If they don't, then they won't. And, you know, that'll be the thing will be, hey, somebody else won the Super Bowl this year. That'll be the harsh reality that you'll have to live in. Yeah. Sorry,
Pat. God forbid, right? There's like a moral failing if they don't win the Super Bowl.
Your team is like 31 other teams.
You are not good, Dave. You are not good.
You. But
I will say this.
The wrong ketchup, sir.
Well, obviously. Excuse me, Avi. Bingo. I will say that this game Saturday, and by the way, love Saturday games. They beat Buffalo in the second game in 2003. 31-0. It was a Saturday at Foxborough. Yeah. I love Saturday football. This is a sneaky, huge game against Buffalo because I don't think Josh Allen is very good. I think he's a fullback playing quarterback, and this is – I'm not parroting what anyone in the media has said. We've said this earlier this year. That Buffalo team is well-coached. Their defense is good. It's at least on the table that Edelman doesn't play. but it's a hat and t-shirt game. And it's just another, if Harry, Myers, Watson, Lacoste, if they can get open, make some catches against a very, very good Buffalo defense, you know, I think that'll, I think the Buffalo team they'll face on Saturday will be the best defense they face the rest of the year.
Could be. I mean, you know, if they make it to the Super Bowl, they might see a team from the NFC that's got a better defense. But yeah, no.
San Francisco's good.
It's a really good defense. I think it's a big game for them. I don't think they need to win it to win the division. But Kansas City is one game behind for the number.
Yeah, it's about the seeding at this point. Buffalo has to play. Buffalo has to play.
Because Buffalo needs a bunch of help, right? Even if they beat the Patriots next week, they need a bunch of help to pass the Patriots in the tiebreaker. The problem for the Patriots is that if they get to four losses, that's where Kansas City is. Kansas City's beating them head-to-head. So, you know.
Can you imagine four losses is a terrible season? Think about it.
I don't think it's terrible at all.
No, but that's what we're being fed, that four losses is a failing.
Like, here's what people don't understand, is that people look at the schedule and they go, like, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win, that's a loss. I don't do that. I don't, you know, I look at it and I go, I look at any given game and it's like, oh, they could lose to Buffalo next week. Sure. Yeah, they could. They could lose Miami the week after. Not insane. Don't think it's insane. They got to come out and play. They got to come out and beat both those teams. And, you know, if you make it through a whole season and you only lose four of them, that's special. That's a special.
Well, they finished 6-2 on the road. Is 6-2 a good road record?
It's better than last year. Last year they went.
Of course it is. It's 750. You're playing 750 ball. It's an excellent record. Right.
If you're playing 750 anywhere, it's great. And the thing is, like, if you're 12-4 or better in the regular season, that's a special regular season. That's one that goes up on the refrigerator. Okay. 12, 13, or 14 wins, any of that, those all go up on the fridge. 15, that's like you're up chasing NFL history at that point. There's only one team that's gone 16. They put a banner up, they took it down, and you know. But that for me, yeah, 12 or more, and you're having a special season. And I think that the Pats only have to win one more to get to there. But
well, the Patriots have done that twice since 2003. In one of those years, they had the temerity to finish with 11 wins. They won the Super Bowl.
Right.
Their first Super Bowl they won 11 regular season games.
True, true. In 2006, they won 12 games. Don't ask me how. That was...
Their defense... it's funny you say that, Dave. I looked at that season because that season, that game in San Diego remains the most... inexplicable. There are a few wins in the history of Boston sports where I had no idea what the hell was going on. That win in the AFC semifinal in January of 07 at the old Jack Murphy Stadium is at the top of the list, the Troy Brown strip game. Yep. But if you go back, if you look at Pro Football Reference, the 06 Patriots defense was fantastic. They had Corey Dillon and Maroney splitting the load. You know, people will always tell you how the receivers were criminally underrepresented on that team.
Bad receivers. Their second best
wasn't great. The Deion Branch holdout probably crippled that team. But, you know, they went to the AFC title game and they were probably, you know, they lost by four on the road against a really excellent Colts team. And that game, that game triggers me.
The bad face guarding penalty called and,
face guarding is not a penalty. Again, for the record, face guarding is not a penalty.
Not a penalty. And anyway, I mean, we could talk about the 2006 Patriots. We could talk about all day. Absolutely. Yeah, no idea how they won 12. But anyway, so the idea is here. Look, 12 is a pretty good run. Yeah. So, you know, look, if the Patriots are going to win next week, they have to do what they did last time they played Buffalo. They have to be smart with the ball. I think Brady's getting a little more time. That Buffalo game started a trend during the Marshall Newhouse era where We saw a lot of Brady drop back, look up, and throw the ball about 30 feet over someone's head. And that was...
What he didn't do was turn it over. And Josh Allen did.
Exactly. And I think he's going to have a little bit more time to throw in this game. So they're going to have to keep the ball. The defense, it's on the defense here. And I would say that every week for the Patriots right now. Look, it's on the defense. They're going to have to play at a high level. And
well, hold on. Who was the breakout player on offense for you yesterday? We discussed them already. Who was it?
Are you going to say it was N'Keal Harry or are you going to say Burkhead?
Burkhead.
Okay.
Burkhead was the closer. He came in and finished that game.
I don't know what that means. He had 20 yards. Okay.
He had 53 yards on the ground.
He had 6 carries. One went for 33 yards. So the other, he had 20 cross.
Yeah, he had five for 20 after that. That's terrible.
I don't know what your whole thing about him being the closer is. I don't even understand the metaphor. Sony averaged more yards per carry yesterday than Brady averaged yards per pass attempt.
Yeah, but why is
89 yards on 19 carries. He also had a catch for 14, so he had 103 yards on the ground. I actually thought Sony Michel had a really nice game. And I felt like at the very end, for some reason, they gave the ball to Rex. And I was like, oh, that's Sony's not going to get his 100-yard game here. But
I was the same way. I really wanted to get it because I've been trumpeting him all year. But the whole thing is – they have a good 1-2 punch. The same thing happened last year. I referenced it earlier. Burkhead scored the touchdown that won the AFC Championship.
Well, you know, they spread the ball around a bunch. They got 7 different guys of catches. And these are the things.
Doesn't that make them harder to defend at some point?
Nobody had more than 3 catches. And the guy who had a bad game in a lot of ways was Sanu. 8 targets, 2 catches. So, you know, Brady overthrew him on a touchdown pass or when he was open in the end zone. But
do you feel like they're close, though, in the passing game? Do you? Because I kind of feel like they're almost there.
Well, you know what this show is about, though? This show isn't about, you know, are they there? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? This show is about how they're being portrayed. And I think right now they just continue to be portrayed as a completely inept team. And what's not coming to light, and maybe a little bit now, maybe a little bit with N'Keal Harry, is people are starting to pick up on with Harry that they're improving. But I think if you look around, they're improving everywhere. The guy who you're not seeing it from so far is Sanu. And Edelman also didn't have a particularly great game. But it looks like he's banged up a bit. We'll see. But, you know, you were pointing out before we started the show that the rookies, that there's this perception that the rookies aren't contributing. And, you know, I think if you look around, Harry was hurt, but he has 3 touchdowns in 4 games. So it's hard to say he's not contributing. Chase Winovich, I know you don't like Pro Football Focus, PFF.
I'm not a big
fan of them, but they have Chase Winovich as their number 2 highest graded edge rusher.
Behind?
Among the rookie class.
Behind Joey Bosa.
Right. It's not bad. That's not a bad place to be. And again, I don't know about the accuracy of that, and it certainly isn't official, but you'd rather be number 2 than second. You'd rather be second to first than second to last in those kind of rankings. He's having a nice year. Of course, Jake Bailey is, you know, he's one of the best punters in the league already, has an impact on what they do, and saved them money over Ryan Allen. So, you know, you look around and you say, okay, they drafted a bunch of linemen who got hurt. And Jo'Wan Williams and Damian Harris are healthy scratches just about every week. So when you say that the rookie class isn't contributing, I find that a little dubious because...
Disingenuous.
It's... Well, there's a difference between disingenuous and dubious. One suggests...
Well, actually...
You're suggesting intent, and this is an important point, though, because it's something we talk about a lot. Are people trying to get this wrong? As in, they're being disingenuous, they're ignoring on purpose, or is it a situation where they are, where they're looking at a fact and they're misinterpreting it with you know, without ill motives. Okay. And I choose to portray it as they just got it wrong. You're portraying it in a way where you're saying that they are being negligent. And I don't know that you're wrong.
You think I'm wrong?
I don't know that you're wrong.
No, what do you think, Dave? What do you think? Do you think I'm wrong?
I think I'm see, this is where there's sort of this
this is where we have a divide.
There's a chicken and egg type thing. That there are I absolutely believe that there are disingenuous people throughout the media who would portray them that way. And there are some people who grew up among disingenuous media and just think that that's the way you're supposed to think. And I think they earnestly are applying a standard that is dubious.
So that basically what you're describing is the Boston Globe press box and the big Pats fans butt crowd.
You know what's funny is, I guess if you throw in the Patriots fans butt crowd, yes, because I wasn't specifically thinking of the Globe, but there are, because you actually had mentioned an article before we started, and so I have no idea if that person is.
By the way, our shit off air is gold.
Well, you had referenced an article before, and so that's what I was thinking of. And I don't think of that person as trying to be malicious. I think of that person as somebody who, and I could be wrong, you know, but.
Yes, you are wrong.
Okay. But anyway, it's a finer point, but I do think that there are people who, I think there's an old guard that looks at this stuff and intentionally tries to put some negative spin on it. And then I think that there's a younger crowd who came up in that and just think that that's the way you look at these things. And that's the correct standard. And that's, you know, well, if N'Keal Harry was hurt and out for eight games, then we just write him off as not a contributor, total bust. And it's like glorified. Now, if you call him a glorified intern, that to me is you're intentionally just trying to be negative.
Well, I have a new verb, Dave. Borgesing.
Is that where you portray recent draft picks as incompetent to validate
Richard Seymour is too tall to play end.
Right.
And too light to play tackle.
Right.
And he got one sack in the pass happy SEC.
Well,
he won't help anytime soon.
Well, and then 20 years later, you're sitting there at the
Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Fame nominee. By the way, that was off the top of my head. Shout out to me.
Right. And you're the guy nominating him. And that's, you know, that's how these things work sometimes. And
that's actually a separate podcast, that the guy who had an agenda against Belichick et al. Is actually the Patriots. He's representing Patriots for the Hall of Fame, and Ty Law got in.
We should talk about that. Well, you know,
that's a separate podcast.
Yeah, let's talk about that in February. Let's do that because, well, at least even if the Patriots are in that game, let's devote a little bit of time to that because it's a really interesting issue. And I don't think that Borges made a bad case for him last year, but it's something that we should talk about when it comes up. I agree. All right. Anything else from the game that you feel like people are...
Well, I'll tell you one thing from the game, and I actually wrote this down. I live in Seattle, bingo. So I have to watch the games at an establishment that has Sunday ticket because I'm a cheap Irishman. I won't pay for it. And there's really no doubting that the Bengals ran the ball effectively on the Patriots in the first 25 minutes of that game.
Yeah.
I did not have the audio on where I was because the Seahawks were playing at the same time. Then I noticed Adam Butler. Danny Shelton and Adam Butler, they don't get a lot of pub, but Adam Butler, first and foremost, really plugged the middle. Mixon's runs really hard. He's a garbage human, but he runs hard. Shelton turned the game on a stop early in the second quarter.
You're saying
once they stop the running game, Andy Dalton ain't going to beat that secondary.
You're saying that about Mixon because of the incident in college where he assaulted a woman.
Yes.
Okay. I just feel like anytime for those who aren't familiar with the history there, we don't just call people garbage for no reason. So,
well, <that's> well, Dave, I'll correct you. I might. You won't.
You might. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that's right. And then if I don't know the reason, I'm probably going to ask you. But no, Shelton.
I'm probably going to call you a garbage human at some point.
Well, so. I would understand that. I would know right. why. But
I know. We've had dinners together. I get it.
It's obvious.
Avi.
Bingo. Shelton made, first of all, the third and fourth down runs that they had.
Turn the game around. Back. The fourth down stop, turn the game around. They were getting 9 yards of carry at that point, ish.
And let's see. That was in
second quarter.
Second quarter. And so it was midway through the second quarter.
They had 18 inches to get, and they had run the ball at will.
Third and two at the Patriots 31. Mixon gets 1 yard with a great play. Bentley came up and stopped him. And then a fourth and one, Shelton just made like an absolute big boy play. He took the lineman, stood him up, came off his block, grabbed Mixon, and Bentley came in to finish up the play. It was all Shelton up front. And
correct.
It was a gorgeous play by him. Total big boy play right there, and those guys don't get much credit. And we go back to how bad the 2016 Browns were, and Shelton played for them.
Well, he was miscast in their defense. I will tell you that the thing that I think that is actually the Patriots' defense is so good this season because they can be so multiple. They can have a rover defense with a front seven. They played a 4-2-5 to start the game yesterday. They played really light, and the Bengals ran the ball on them.
And Bullock after a 48-yard field goal to draw Cincy within 27-13.
Now, how does that happen? Oh, I know why, because I changed tabs. I had one screen. It was like automatically muted, and then on this screen, automatically plays. Anyway, if you had autoplay on your bingo card, congratulations. We got a little bit of game audio just leaked in. I'm sorry, please.
Scartsy, technical difficulties. There you go. But I will say, it's like what they did when they stuffed them that fourth down, the Patriots defense is so multiple where they can beat you by playing nickel or dime. They can beat you by playing heavy up front. And the Bengals ran the ball really well in the first 22 minutes of that game. Great.
They made adjustments.
Great. Great. The Patriots had the tools in place. It's not like they can't stop them. They did.
And I mean,
and kudos to the Bengals for getting the 10 points, but then they got three more the rest of the game.
Yep. The adjustments came in and the defense did a great job. And the special teams did a great job. And okay. So, all right. We've talked about the game. One thing that's still going on is that before the game, the Fox got a hold of some of the footage from the what they're calling Spygate 2, the incident in which a person who does not work for the Patriots took some sideline footage.
Not a staff member or employee. No,
well, there was a staff member. The
allegedly.
And what's his name? I keep forgetting it. We do a lot of research here.
Real-time research is an entitled town staple. Oh,
God, this is so embarrassing. But the full-timer who works for Kraft Sports put out a statement, explained his end of the story later on. And he was working with freelancers. Now, what has happened here? Now, let's again. This story is miscast in its just base portrayal. Okay. So the base portrayal of this story is routinely miscast over and over when it's told because they say Patriots videographer. We're talking about a crew that was employed by Kraft Sports Productions. That is a wholly separate entity from the New England Patriots.
So you're saying they're freelancers, correct?
Well, one of them is a full-timer for Kraft Sports, a senior producer.
But there was a freelancer, correct?
Yes, there was at least one. I think there might have been multiple freelancers. But
all right, so freelancers, so that's a hyper-local explanation. I get it. Please go
on. So, I'll get into that part in just a minute. But they showed some of the sideline footage. And let's reset this by just saying this is a crew from Kraft Sports Productions who is credentialed media who violated the terms of their media credential. That's the penalty. That's the alleged infraction. The issue that arises with should the NFL punish the Patriots? Here's the issue. The NFL should punish the Patriots if they find that there was some kind of plan between Kraft Sports Productions and the New England Patriots football team to record and share that information illegally. And I don't know, given the evidence that we have, how you could possibly determine that they did. And the key for me is the sideline tape. First of all, they showed it on national television. They weren't giving away state secrets of the Cincinnati Bengals on Fox. If there was something on the tape that was so damaging, why did they show it where everybody, all the future Bengals opponents, can watch it? Why would they do that? Two, the tape is useless. You have people's backs. So all of these signals that they're supposedly getting, and by the way, signals don't exist anymore. Okay, hand signals? They don't exist anymore. So in some small cases for audibles and things like that, but for calling in the plays, they don't. Now let's say that they did. They're recording their backs. You can't see their hands. What use is that possibly? Now, here's the big factor for me about why this tape is worthless. There is, and in the article I often reference, and I talked about this on the show last week, from Scouts Inc., an article that they wrote for ESPN analyzing some of the old Spygate tapes. They talked about the evolution of those tapes where, over time, they went from merely filming the signals to filming the signals and then filming the scoreboard. They'd show you the down and distance. They'd show you the time on the clock. That's what the coaches' tapes do. On the coaches' tapes, they run the play, the all 22, and you see what everybody does. Then they show you the end zone angle. So they show you the above angle, they show you the end zone angle, and then they show you the scoreboard so that you know what the down and distance is and what time is on the clock. And you need that information to know when one play has ended and another has begun. In the tape of the show for the Cincinnati sideline, you have no idea what's happening on the field. So if somebody's, even if you could decode what the signals are, you wouldn't be able to pair them up to the tape because you don't know when one play's begun and another has ended. So all this stuff about how, oh, well, maybe they're looking to see where the coaches are because that gives some indication about maybe this is a fake punt. Maybe it's a fake field goal. If the coach stands over here, maybe they're going to do an onside kick. If the coach is standing over there, you don't know if they're kicking. You can't pair up where the coach is standing to the play that's on the field. It's like to decode something, you need some means of breaking the code. You need context. There's no contextual information from the game to tell you what's happening. It is worthless footage. That's why they put it on television. And the reason they chose the snippet they chose was because you hear the guy from Kraft Sports, that's the full-timer, you hear him say, and I apologize for not knowing his name. You hear him talk, we say stuff like, I didn't know, I can just delete this and it's over. And the guy from Cincinnati comes in and says, the damage is done, my friend. Because
damage is done.
And because he's a Cincinnati Bengals security man. And he finally
Paul Blart mall cop.
Yeah. Finally, someone's trying to rob this dumb mall. And,
hey, your Orange Julius, all the Diet Coke is gone, my friend. Damage done.
And so,
So, well, Dave, I'll tell you this. So let me
everybody thinks that's a sign of guilt. This idea that, like, hey, he offered to delete the tape. That's exactly what you would do if you just wanted to demonstrate that, hey, I don't want any part of this. I wasn't trying to get some illegal tape. You could delete it for all I care. Just get that thing away from me. I don't want it anymore. I just want to keep my job.
You can actually almost hear the Patriots operative shitting his pants. He's like, oh, fuck.
He's not a Patriots operative.
Well, he's a freelancer, not an employee or team member. I believe he might have been a freelancer also for a Boston Sports Journal.
You're conflating things. See, here's something I've learned.
I'm being disingenuous?
No, I don't.
I'm completely genuine. You're right about that.
You're taking some of the facts out there. So there is, there was, and that was 5 seconds of dead air, probably.
This is going on the cutting room floor. Bingo.
Patriots videographer, right? Let's look up this guy. I want to make sure that we're gonna get his name on here. So that
he deserves it because he did. You know, they sent a guy out on an all expense paid trip to Cincinnati in the middle of December. Let the punishment fit the crime for a game against the 1-12 team to film shit. And the guy was probably going to get a hot dog or take a piss or something like that. And no one's been more in need of going to the bathroom since Albert Breer. After in Columbus in 2002, if you really think that what that guy was doing was nefarious, then you have an agenda that is so clear. And I will say the thing that's helped me, Dave, in the last when this break 8 days ago. I think what this has done is helped me separate legitimate media from media that's with an agenda.
Okay. So more bingo, because I definitely left a couple of your jokes hanging there. But
actually, I would disagree, but that's fine. It's like,
you don't think I left you hanging? Okay.
It's part and parcel at this point.
You were on a roll. So maybe that's why, like, it would have been weird if I stepped on it, but okay. David Mondio, a supervising producer with Kraft Sports. That's the guy we're talking about. David Mondio.
Who worked for them for 2 decades.
Yep, correct? And the full-time employee. He's the one full-time employee who's there.
Of Kraft Productions, not the Patriots.
Kraft Sports, right, works for Kraft Sports Productions. And right. This is important to understand, because if you talk about the Patriots video department.
Those two words. Patriots video are just get everyone triggered in national media.
Teeming with suspicion. The Patriots video department is a different group. That's not Kraft Sports Productions. That video department is run by a guy named Jimmy D. And that's where the Spygate, Matt Estrella, the employee who was filming on the Jets sideline, was working for Jimmy D. That's a separate department. If you're in Foxborough and you talk about Jimmy D, or you hear people talk about Jimmy D, you know that he's got this little room on the lower level of the press box. And I remember, so he's from New Bedford, and I used to work at the New Bedford Standard Times. And there was this moment where during the original Spygate that those of us who were covering the Patriots for that paper looked up and were like, oh my God, like these are all local guys. Because Jimmy started the department. Bill Parcells hired him, and there is, you should all go watch, ironically, maybe not ironically, I don't know, coincidentally, a Do Your Job segment on Jimmy D.
Okay? It's out there.
It's out there, and it talks about the whole department, or how the whole department is set up. That is the group, okay, that was recording and processing tapes related to Spygate. And you could go at the time, when Matt Estrella was found on the sideline, you could go and find him as listed as an employee of the Patriots. Kraft Sports Productions produces things like the Do Your Job videos. Separate group, they make content for Patriots.com. And they, when Spygate happened, you wouldn't find their names on the Patriots website because they don't work for the Patriots. So anyway, here we are. You got the freelancers, and here's to me how you know they weren't cheating. The freelancers are guys who work for local media. Think about this. If you're the Patriots and you have your history of suspicion and all the stuff that's going on, you're not going to hire a freelance cameraman who works hand in hand with the reporters covering your team.
In the press box.
So send that person out to a press box to go help you cheat. It doesn't make any sense.
And you can hear it in his voice on the Glazer video. He left it on the side, and he's like, oh, shit. I'll delete it. I'm sorry. I'll delete it. And all of a sudden, the national media, and Dan Orlovsky, the former UConn quarterback who had a cup of coffee with the Lions, and I'm not going to say that he stepped out of bounds in the end zone because that would be too easy. Dan Orlovsky was a vocal today in kind of impugning the Patriots and doing something that nefarious. I would say the same thing. So I always want to do one of my favorite followers on Twitter is at WWII Felger, WW2 Felger.
Roman
the Ravens, the Baltimore Ravens have a setup in M&T Bank Stadium where they have a series of cameras mounted around the perimeter, the entire perimeter of M&T Bank Stadium, filming the field.
What's it called?
It's called hashtag Ravens360.
Well, it's called
filming the field, the sidelines, the end zones, and they've been doing this in plain sight for, I believe, I don't remember the exact amount of time. It's at least 30 months.
So,
and I'm just asking the question, Dave. The Ravens are 2-2. They're now, what's their record now? 12-2?
Sounds right.
I'm just asking the question. Did they use the video that was trained on the field and the sidelines to gain an unfair advantage? I'm just asking the question.
Well, I think here's the thing, you know. Ravens 360. That term 360 is meant, what they do is
on the sideline, the same thing that happened with one tripod in Cincinnati.
Right. Let me paint the picture for the audience, because what you need to understand is the way this thing works is almost like a matrix type effect where you will see them running a play and then they'll turn you feel like because they have footage from all directions, they are able to do this effect where they twist the field, and now you can see it from the back end of the play, and you can see where the defensive backs are and what they're looking at. And so it has.
Did they show the sidelines?
Well, wait. Let me paint the picture. So you to do this problem.
Okay, Picasso, go ahead.
To achieve this effect, you need to have footage from every direction, the entire field. So
which may include scoreboards, correct?
Which at the very least includes the play, so you can see where all the players are, which would make it easy to pair up with the coach's film. And you also have a camera pointed directly down on the sideline. They have, for every game they've played, somewhere in that building, and I don't know if it's a separate organization from the Ravens or not, but they have a camera and they have footage of every team sideline, the entire sideline, which they can pair with other footage that would allow them. And by the way, footage of the sideline while you can also see the play. So they can very easily pair it with the coach's film. And if they wanted to decode signals, they could very easily do it. It is so much more advanced than what you're seeing coming out of the Patriots. Now, am I accusing the Ravens of cheating? I'm actually not. I don't know if they're sharing that footage with Harbaugh's staff or the football operations.
I will.
That's a big leap, but let me finish my thought. To do that, you would have to show some kind of interaction between those two organizations, whoever's producing that film and the football operations unit. And so is there that kind of action going on? I don't know. But you know what? I can't prove it with the Patriots either. So what are we doing here? Like, why are we worked up about garbage tape that was taken by somebody who's media from another organization? Now, certainly a sister company, certainly a same ownership and control, and there are some issues there, but there are a lot of places. And this, I'm going to get to this point because everyone says, well, they should have known. First of all, it wasn't football operations. This isn't the tightly wound Bill Belichick ship that's running this.
Yeah, John Harbaugh doesn't want to know what's going on.
They have the same owner, and I'll tell you something. There are plenty of things in business, and I've seen this professionally, where you have a company that's doing well, and it starts a sister company that does something adjacent to the business. And they have different management, and they have different employees, and everybody thinks that both sides know what the other side is doing. That's not always true. And so I think here is a good example of that. And people say, well, the Patriots, why didn't they tell the Bengals? They're usually so good with details. That's because the details are on the football side, and this is a different set of people. Anyway, you want to finish your thought on the Ravens?
Take their picks, all of them. do I believe that? Now, seriously, do I believe that? If I'm gonna be intellectually honest, Dave, and if national media is going to impugn the Patriots for having a guy put a $500 camera on a tripod and leave it alone on the sideline.
On a tripod.
In plain bleeping sight, and I'm trying to be more.
Do you know why this makes me upset?
I'm trying to be more family friendly because I've found out that a nephew of mine listens to the podcast.
Oh, great.
Matthew, in plain bleeping sight.
Can we just do one bleeped version for him and get that?
Disingenuous.
Listen, people tune in to hear you and your cursing.
Fuck off. It's just so. The reasoning is. What they're doing, and what's it called, Dave? Help me out here. It's called a conclusion-based reasoning. Is that what we're doing?
I don't know.
We have a conclusion, and we have to draw, squiggly lines to get to that conclusion from one.
Well, everybody is convinced. Like, so many people I've talked to on Twitter have basically seemed to figure out that this sideline footage is useless, but want to punish the Patriots because of their history. Like this
pattern of behavior, right? Pattern of behavior, correct?
But yeah, like, or it's like a, they're called.
What happened in Jacksonville tonight? Jacksonville, Dante Fowler, who now plays for the Rams, Dante Fowler was fined, I believe, close to $750,000 for not participating in Jags practices as a Jaguar. Tom Coughlin is the head of football operations in Jacksonville. No one in national media is going to draw a line, and I know you're a Giants fan, bingo. No one's going to draw a line from Tom Coughlin violating the rules in Jacksonville back to New York. Nor should they, for the record. Nor should they. But the hypocrisy in media, it's rampant. Just open your goddamn eyes.
Well, here's what bothers me. Is that, you have some of the national media hot takers being like, the Patriots have been caught cheating again. And it's this gross portrayal of what happened because the Patriots didn't, the football operations didn't, there's no evidence they sent these people out there. If they did, it's the dumbest plan ever. But it goes back to, Belichick's decision to ignore that memo from Ray Anderson, who at the time was the vice president of game day football operations. And in 2006, when he sent this memo under the new commissioner, Roger Goodell, that it's very hard for me to argue with a straight face that that is a rule, because that's not the rulemaking process of the NFL. The VP of football operations does not get to unilaterally make rules. So Belichick kind of carried on with what he'd been doing. And the only other rules at the time that prohibited filming were, they had this rule in the game day operations manual, this policy that said, if you're going to be filming for the safety of the equipment And, well, really, to protect the equipment and the individuals who are filming, you should be in a covered space, when, and it should be heated, and it had certain specifications about where you could do it.
Still fairly arbitrary.
Well, it's not arbitrary, but the purpose of it was not to prohibit spying. It very clearly was to protect equipment. And then, in the memo itself, now, the NFL never put out the full memo. They put out one snippet of the memo, which says something along the lines of, you know, all filming, including the filming of hand signals, is prohibited for use in games. Okay. And so Belichick's thing was, well, I misinterpreted that. I thought they meant for games that you're currently playing in, not for games in the future. All right. And so that's a little bit of an ambiguity in how that was laid out. And I think it was perfectly fair. And the reason I would love to see the full memo is because the thing that teams were scared about back at that time was this idea that, like, okay, digital cameras are getting better and you don't have to go and process film. You've got this direct-to-computer video that people could go into locker room and perhaps dial it up and see something. And so,
Dave, hold on. I want to ask you a question.
Stop. So Belichick, at the time, for him to think, and people gave him a hard time about this, but for him to think, oh, this is about game day, that I can't use this footage today. I can use it later, but I can't use it today. It made a lot of sense because that was the fear that teams had at the time, and that's the fear that drove, in my opinion, the memo, and that's why I would love to see the full memo, but guess what? The NFL only gave us the strongest language against filming, didn't give us any of the context around it. Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Give me a thought.
Do you remember what Bob Kraft asked Belichick? How much?
Yes.
What
this
he said.
Why he's right.
Bob Kraft asked Belichick, how much did this help you?
And what did Belichick?
1 in 100. And he said, like, and 1%. I'm paraphrasing.
He like said 1%. One. And what did Kraft say?
You're a schmuck.
And this is why. Because now, all you need to do is say Patriots and camera, and everybody's looking over there like OJ has another knife, right?
That's actually fucking perfect.
Right. Everybody's looking over there like, oh, there's OJ. He's got a knife. And they're like, well, no. That's some people OJ hired. And it's a bread knife, and they're actually actively cutting bread over there. But people are like, nah, I got OJ a knife in the same sentence, and that's good enough for me. Like,
I'm not
you know,
sure this helps, but
pretty suspicious about OJ. And you're like, no. That's OJ's chef. And he's not even on the Buffalo Bills. He's just a chef.
He's got a spoon and he has brie cheese.
Right. He's spooning brie. It's just a utensil. It's not a knife. Or it's a bread knife, which is serrated. Come on.
Spooning Ben Volen's brain into an ice cream bowl, which is very easily done.
What are you talking about?
I have no fucking idea.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
The Volen shit. I have
you just
in my
beat
notes.
Us the
I have guys. In my notes, Dave. There's so much Volen stuff that we're ignoring from the past week. Volen is an addle-minded dullard, and I just can't. We could do 60 minutes on Volen or Hyperlocal Harry on this stuff, and I'm doing ham-handed pop culture analogies, bingo. And this is why you're the host and I am the, you know, the ranting sidekick.
We're both the hosts. Just what's your point?
I have no point.
Okay, good.
Do I ever?
You got a little weird on me, but we're gonna move by it. Okay. So, all right, look, this is complete nonsense, and here's the problem that the NFL has. They have very clearly tried to lay down, to grease the runway, to foam up the runway, and land a relatively soft punishment on the Patriots. They have been trying to do that. And the NFL is forever beholden to public perception. It governs every move they make.
Correct.
And so that's how this punishment will almost certainly, and it's amazing the rhetoric that's come out of the league.
It'll be draconian. Said, agreed?
Well, what they've said is that they've leaked through NFL.com columnist Judy Batista that what they saw on the tape did not lend to any possibility of cheating. They've said that. It doesn't look like there's any information that that tape would have provided.
Trial balloons. These are all trial balloons.
Right. And so then the other trial balloon was, yet still, there may be some kind of nasty punishment coming for higher-ups in the organization. And so possibly ownership even. And so that's the other trial balloon. So they've shown us the range of where this could go. The finding that the Patriots didn't cheat to the finding that somebody big has to go down. And they'll let this languish. They might even wait. What they might do is, well, I don't know. I can't speculate as to what they'll do, but you have to think, like, do they want to just wait until the offseason to announce a punishment for this? Because then you're not generating all this negative attention during the playoffs.
Don't you think it's interesting that the NFL released the video from Cleveland yesterday, but no video has been released from Jupiter?
All right, look, what are we doing here? This is...
I'm just asking the question, Dave. Look, let's be serious.
Nobody wants to see the video from Jupiter.
No, agreed. No, I would actually disagree with you. Fans of other teams in the AFC.
I'm getting the impression NFL. That you want to see the video from Jupiter.
How dare you?
That's you brought it up. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just asking the question, Dave. That's all I'm asking.
So
can I do my enemies list for the week?
Is this a thing now?
I texted you. You clearly haven't looked at your phone.
You know what's funny is I looked at it like 4 minutes after you sent it, and
you forgot. So that's fine.
And I was like,
so I'm ripping up. So I am a Boston sports media watch expat, former a guest and friend of Entitled Town, Bruce Allen, many years ago, had a message board for Boston sports media watch. Bingo, Scartzy.
He's been a guest on this program.
Yeah, Bruce Allen is, and he was a really, really good guest. And Dan Chauncey called him at home. And other Boston sports media tried to call his employer because they're insecure asshats. So I want to do, a friend of mine, Joe Donahue, had a great idea many years ago about an enemies list, top three. So I want to do my top three enemies.
So it's like three up, three down, but without
the up. No, it's there's no three up.
Okay, got it.
So I want to do number three mediate of the week. Mittens losing dullard Ben Volen, whose complete lack of understanding of what he's looking at, the English language, and just general awareness is probably going to leave him a staple on the enemies list for Iron Mike Irons. Number two is Dan Shaughnessy. Shank, so sorry for the 8th anniversary of your son getting arrested and kicking a cop. And Dan actually had the lack of self-awareness this week to write a piece on Bob Kraft and the Patriots. So, Shank, John Henry's going to give you a cookie. Congratulations. Number one, Andy Hart. Andy Hart.
So glad I didn't make the list. Go ahead.
Well, not yet. Counselor.
I didn't
Don't worry
make
about
the top
it.
Three anyway.
Number one is Andy Hart, whose inability to grasp anything related to reality and to not think about anything other than his next set of reps at the gym. And while trolling his listeners and being paired with Ryan Hannibal, he actually thought leaving Patriots Football Weekly to be paired with Ryan Hannibal was an upgrade. I hope the health insurance at WEI is worth it, and I'm going to guess it isn't. So congratulations. You are the initial three enemies list on Entitled Town.
What's funny about this show is we can do the whole next show on the value of an enemies list. Like, we can debate, we can have a conversation about whether this is the best way to improve.
Well, and you know what? What's actually, you know, to trampoline off your point, Dave, I think we could actually do this. If we recorded this, we're recording this Monday night during the Saints-Colts game. I think we could probably do, with fairly decent accuracy, if we recorded this on Friday night after looking at the immediate storylines of the week leading up to the Buffalo game, we could probably record it Friday and have a fairly representative program on Monday, because the Boston sports media, there's zero independent thought. All they do is parrot each other.
And you're saying there's an element of predictability.
Yeah, it's more predictable. It's more predictable than Ray Perkins running the 95 Patriots offense, run, pass. That's
85.
There's no critical thinking.
You're right. 95. Sorry, you said Ray.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, 95 was 5-11 or 6-10 the year before the Super Bowl. But there are some beacons that I probably don't. Jeff Howe, friend of Entitletown, good. Matt Chatham, same way. Nick Underhill, you know, I'm kind of going back and forth on him.
Oh, you almost had three up.
Well, I can give you maybe three up and 30 down.
Could you give us like friends?
No, I have no friends in Boston media. We're acquaintances.
Okay. All right. Well.
However, hold on. I do want to say something briefly.
Okay.
And this really, really, really pissed me off today.
I'm shocked.
Big if true. Bingo. Josh Gordon got suspended today. And I think there's nothing left to say. If you're a human being who has watched Josh Gordon, by all accounts, in his encounters with media, he was a respectful, humble person. For anyone to take a victory lap on somebody who's an addict that relapses, you are a human piece of fecal matter. If you don't realize if you're taking a victory lap on somebody who's relapsed, you have a lack of self-awareness to the point where anything you should say in the future should be invalidated.
Yeah, I mean,
anyone who does, let me finish. It's going to be 10 more seconds. Uh-huh. You do that, revealed who you are, and you've revealed yourself as a garbage human. Nothing you say should be taken seriously because you have no empathy and you have a lack of character and just a lack of feeling for other people who are struggling.
And you are accruing penalties you are accruing consequences that you have to deal with in this life or the next.
I believe that's the dictionary definition of karma, counselor.
That's how it works. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's how it works. All right, well.
Or it'll be accrued in bankruptcy.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered the ins and outs of Spygate 2: Fake Spygate. And
Spygate 2 fucked up Boogaloo.
I don't like using the reference to Breaking 2 when people do. I feel like that's played out. That's just my preference. I feel like, you know, well, we get it.
I've played it out. It's what I do, Dave. I play shit out.
No, it's not you. It's society. It's just kind of burned through that reference to the sequel to the movie Breaking. But, you know, it's going to happen every time there's a sequel. People are going to throw in an electric boogaloo and there's nothing you can do about it. But, okay, you know, Spygate 2, fake Spygate, is still with us and may be for some time. So, again, I'm going to remind everyone that the league had reached a conclusion in its investigation and the Patriots admitted their behavior immediately. And the league issued a penalty to the Patriots of taking their first-round draft pick, $200,000 or $250,000 fine to the franchise, and a $500,000 fine to Bill Belichick personally. And they did that within 4 days.
4 days.
4 days.
4 days. 96 hours.
Yes.
So I want to, before we sign off, Dave, want to just remind everybody that you can find us on Twitter at EntitledTown, our email address. And we had a couple emails this week, but I'll punt like Jake Bailey until next week on those. It's EntitledTown@gmail.com. Dave's on Twitter at ThatDaveBrown. I am at Ironhead334. We're actually heading into the really interesting and fun part of the season. They're playing Buffalo, a really good team, on Saturday. They wrap up against Miami. If they win those two games, they're the number two seed, and they, despite what you may have heard over the last 20 weeks, they don't suck. They don't blow. They've won double digits now every season since 2003. I think that's pretty good.
Can't disagree with that. Okay, I think we've done a whole podcast here. Again, Saturday game next week. Do you want to tell the people what we're on to?
We're on to Saturday and the Buffalo Bills.
All right, on to Buffalo. Bye for now, everybody.